Welcome to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson broadcasting during the Great Depression of 2009. And, you know, this has been forecasted for a long time. I can remember back in the 1970s and 1980s picking up books like Howard Ruff's How to Prosper During the Coming Bad Years. That was a number one seller back in 1979. I don't know if anybody remembers that guy. Also, Harry Figge's Bankruptcy 1995. I think that came out in the early 1980s. Ravi Batra's The Great Depression of 1990. Never happened. For 30 years, guys like Howard Ruff, Ravi Batra, Harry Figge, etc., have been sounding the warnings. Brace yourself. The big ones are coming, and you better run for the hills or at least buy gold. Well, throughout all of that, the gods of the marketplace were laughing at anybody who thought that the gravy train, the greed train, would continue forever. But, you know, principled people always had a little bit of a catch in their spirit about this kind of stuff because they just didn't think you could live on greed forever. You know, you can't just live off of debt forever and ever. How would you survive with a debauched money supply forever and ever when everybody who's got a cursory understanding of history knows that no country, no empire ever survives without hard money backing the currency? You know, and that's what was working in the craw of those of us who knew a little history, had a little principle behind our economic sense, and couldn't believe that the current system based upon a fractional reserve system, based upon an inflating money supply, could ever survive. Now, there are no prophets here in this radio program, just a few people who take the word of God seriously and the principles of God's word seriously. The debtor is servant to the lender, and it's better to be free from debt than to be under the curse of debt. Well, we took those as basic economic principles from God's word, but there are two schools of thought now, two possible scenarios as to what could happen in a fractional reserve system that hits the wall. All right, two scenarios. Number one, hyperinflation. The other, deflation. Today, we're going to look at hyperinflation. The hyperinflation scenario, we're going to deal with deflation later in an upcoming program. But the basic premise of hyperinflation is you've got a national debt that's going to force the hyperinflation scenario. We've got an accumulated national debt of $13 trillion. It took us about 200 years or 250 years to come up with $1 trillion of debt and an additional 15, 20 years to add an additional $12 trillion of debt. And now we're going exponential, my friends. Including Medicare and Social Security debts, we're looking at $55 trillion of federal debt. We're just talking about the federal government there, not talking about all of the bank loans, not talking about all of the mortgage properties, all of the corporate loans, et cetera, et cetera. The Bank for International Settlements now puts the worldwide derivative contracts at $1,140 trillion, all right? Hard to get your mind around that number, isn't it? $1,140 trillion of worldwide derivatives today. And the problem, of course, is that our collateral isn't quite $1,140 trillion. We're looking at $18 trillion for U.S. residential real estate total. Value for all present-day stock markets in the world is at $50 trillion. Okay, so you got assets of what, $80, $90 trillion? World assets of $80, $90 trillion, and yet you've got a worldwide derivative contracts at $1,140 trillion. So how do you resolve all this? Well, hyperinflation is a really possible way to do it, devaluate all the money, and then you've got hyperinflation where your $12,000 in savings is worth about $100 overnight. You take it and buy your last basket of groceries. Credit cards are useless. Any bank savings are rationed by the government or completely frozen. Now, you could perhaps take 3 to 5 gold coins and use them to pay off an entire home mortgage. That's possible, unless gold and silver are illegalized to hold or exchange, which, by the way, has happened in the history of America. As it turns out, after the Great Depression, gold, silver, it was illegal to hold it until about, what was it, 1973. So can this happen? Yeah, it can happen. It happened before. It can happen again. If you sit around saying it can never happen here, think I'll have another beer. I tell you what, you're wrong. You're wrong. Here's what Henry Ford said in 1933. It is well that people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. Well, there are those who make things happen, there are those who watch things happen, and there are those who wonder what happened. And we're hoping that most of our listening audience will not be in the third category. We're hoping that that you're going to know what's going on and you're going to know what to do when these things happen. In just a moment, we're going to talk with David McIlvaney from International Collectors Associates. And he's going to talk a little bit about what to do in bad economic times and whether or not we're dealing with hyperinflation. Be back in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations.
Generations of Knowing Him is the theme for the Christian Family Conference coming to the Denver Merchandise Mart June 18 to 20, featuring 70 workshops, an exhibit hall with curriculum from over 200 vendors, and speakers including Bill Jack, Kevin Swanson, and Little Bear Wheeler. Come to the 25th Annual Christian Family Conference at the Denver Merchandise Mart June 18 to 20, presented by Christian Home Educators of Colorado. Register online at check.org. That's check.org.
Welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, and today we are living in remarkable times, my friends. Some people call it the Great Depression of 2009. We'll see what happens as things play out, but as the future unfolds, none of us here think that the fractional reserve banking system is going to survive. This whole monetized debt system is ever going to survive, and that's why we're talking about hyperinflation or deflation. What are the scenarios? Today we're going to take a little bit of a look at hyperinflation, some of the things could happen here in the near future. And with me is David McIlvaney from International Collectors Associates. He's got his own weekly radio program, which I tune into at McIlvaney.com on a regular basis myself. And I'd just like to welcome David McIlvaney to the Generations broadcast.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's good to be with you.
Hey, David, man, we're living in historic times. You look at the last 2 years, and I mean, this is almost like living in 1929. Or, I mean, some significant things happening that will be referred to in the history textbooks probably, 30, 40 years from now.
Kevin, when you look back at this, you're right. It will be remarkable to just go through all the things that have happened in such a short period of time. By the end of last year, we had lost 45% of the world's wealth, basically $60 trillion worth of real estate value, stock and bond value had evaporated. $60 trillion on a worldwide basis. And I think one of the things that it's hard to conceive of even $1 trillion of value, $60 trillion, half of the world's wealth has disappeared. What the implications are and the ramifications for that, both politically and geopolitically, that certainly is worthy of note. From a monetary and economic standpoint, you have to assume that there's significant changes ahead. The G20, we're very keen on discussing here in London just a few weeks ago how the monetary order, the world monetary order, had to change. The Russians and the Chinese were certainly giving a standing ovation to that notion. And just the idea the rest of the world is sick and tired of the world having the U.S. having the world's reserve currency. We've had a privilege since 1944, which we have frankly abused. And now I think the rest of the world is saying something has to change.
And here in America, the real estate boom has busted. We're talking the last 2 years now, and the stock market has come crashing down to the sevens. This is a landmark occasion in the lives of these people we call Americans. And 35, 40 years ago, and over the last 35 to 40 years, we were listening to people like Howard Ruff, Harry Figge Jr., Don McIlvaney, and others, your father, who were warning us about these sorts of things. And it was always, these guys are the chicken littles. It's the doom and gloom. I mean, we're tired of hearing this. They've been saying it for 30 years. It'll never happen here. Think I'll have another beer, you know. And voila, maybe it is happening. Are people waking up to this?
Unfortunately, Kevin, it's been a force. It's been a force majeure. People have had to deal with it the hard way, kind of being slapped in the face with reality in a very cold and harsh way. We see recovery on the horizon, but certainly not here. Now, on the horizon, maybe 3 to 5 years out, and I think that may be a conservative estimate. But if you look at the Ken Rogoff study, which came out at the end of 2008, early 2009, teaches economics at Harvard. Some good things come from Harvard, but 3.5 years is the average recovery time in the stock market. From when things start to implode, 3.5 years is the average time it takes for you to begin recovery. In the real estate market, what he did is he looked at 19 of the world's greatest banking collapses and banking crises, and then looked at how it affected these various asset classes. For real estate, it took close to 6.5 years to enter into recovery. So, I mean, I know here locally we've got people saying, hey, the worst is behind us. We've seen a 10, 15, 20% haircut. And, you know, the reality is Rogoff, and this is just an average, 3.5 years before you enter recovery in stocks, 6.5 years before you enter a recovery in real estate, typically a 55% drop in stocks, and on average a 35% drop in real estate. We've already seen some of those numbers on the East Coast and West Coast where the greatest gains were, where you saw really a speculative bubble, but you're beginning to see numbers that look more like the 15, 20, 25. We may even get to the 30, 35%, even in the heartland of the country where there was no speculative bubble.
There's talking about recovery already. I think somebody said Citigroup was showing a profit just the last week, or that maybe they weren't showing the profit. Nobody was really sure if they were showing the profit or they weren't showing the profit, but they're trying to grasp onto some of these signs of hope. Any recovery as far as you're concerned happening right now?
No, absolutely not. And I'll tell you, this has to do with having bad government statistics as what is giving us this glimmer of hope. When you look at what just happened with the Federal Accounting Standards Board, even just in the last couple of weeks, Kevin, this really sheds light on how Citigroup could be showing a $1.6 billion first quarter profit. Their trading profits for March, they were roughly at about a $6 billion loss, and they swung to an over $3 billion profit right after the Federal Accounting Standards Board gave them the ability to redefine values on their balance sheet. Now, here's what I mean by that. Let's say you've got something that you're showing a 50% loss on your personal balance sheet. Maybe it's a stock, maybe it's a house, maybe whatever it is, it's half of what it used to be. The Federal Accounting Standard Board just came in and told banks all across America, you can define what the value of that asset is. If you want to call it worth full value versus worth 50 cents on the dollar, feel free for reporting purposes to do so. In other words, it's a total sham, a total obfuscation of the truth. And what we've done is we have essentially put a floor underneath the value of the shares of these banks.
And so much of the economy depends upon how much you trust the Federal Reserve, the bankers, the elected officials, and I think Americans are beginning to trust them less and less because, boy, you know, it seems like they're lying about every other thing they say. And you don't know when they're telling the truth and when they're not telling the truth. And when your economic system is based upon trust, we could see some more failure here.
Trust is key. Trust is key. You've hit the nail on the head, Kevin, because in the marketplace, if you're willing to invest, if you're willing to take the hard-earned dollars that you've garnered from wages through your blood, sweat, and tears, you have to have some sort of assurance that it's not just a grand scam. And, you know, that's what is dawning on people. And it's been a slow deterioration up to this point. We had WorldCom and Enron back in 2000, 2001. We had Arthur Andersen about the same time. So you began to see a distrust of corporate America. I think the big transition over the next 6 to 12 months is going to be as the TALF, the TALF program, the TARP program, the PPIP program, all of these programs that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury have put into effect here in the last few months to be the ultimate solution to this crisis, when they're proven to be utterly ineffective, Kevin, that's when people start to scratch their head and say, who do we trust? Who has the answers?
And it certainly isn't helping when the CFO of Freddie Mac is committing suicide. I mean, that's not helping anybody.
No, it's not. Now, I think, Kevin, in answer to your question, are we seeing recovery? The answer has to be a definitive no.
Well, when you look at these depressions, I think the Great Depression of the 1920s and 30s showed that you did not bottom out immediately. It was sort of a slow sag. I mean, there was a dip, and then there was a rise. There was another dip, and then another rise, and then another dip, another rise. It took a while for this thing to really flatten out and for things to settle out. And that's really the way it's going to happen here, too, I would guess. I think people are here saying, you know, we're Americans here. We're not Argentina. We're not Zimbabwe or Germany in the Weimar days. We can pull out of this thing. I mean, we're smart people here. We've got really smart people running this Federal Reserve. They're not going to put a bullet to the head of our economic system and pull the hyperinflation trigger. What do you say to that?
Well, Kevin, I think the only thing that separates the United States of America from Argentina is the fact that we have reserve currency status. Our U.S. dollar is sitting on the balance sheet of every central bank around the world, and it's necessary. We actually signed a contract and had the rest of the world sign a contract, the Bretton Woods Agreement, in 1944. And from 1944 forward, we have had a privileged position that no one else in the world has had. And that is, in fact, what is being called into question right now. You've had the Russians, you've had many of the Scandinavian countries, several Middle Eastern countries, starting to diminish the dollars that they have on reserves in their central banks because they've watched what we're doing in terms of the deficits that we're running, in terms of the money that we're creating. Now we're monetizing debt that the market won't absorb, and they're saying to themselves, we've got to limit our exposure to the dollar because this is not going to turn out well for us. So what I'm saying, Kevin, is that we have had something that has distinguished us from Argentina. But you take away that one thing, world reserve currency status, and we are already in the position of Argentina. What we have is the ability to hand out those added dollars to the rest of the world. If we don't have a captive audience, and it's important to realize that Bretton Woods created a captive audience for our currency. If we lose the captive audience, then as we create those dollars and they have nowhere to go, and they just sit there in the marketplace, that is in fact what creates super or hyperinflation, when it literally takes a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread.
And America's biggest creditor is China. They're holding, what, $1.9 trillion of our debt?
Yep.
What are they saying? What do they think about the possibility of us monetizing that debt?
Yeah, they've got $1.95 trillion in reserve assets. 1.25 of that is in dollar-denominated assets.
Okay.
Some of that's treasuries. Some of that is the old Fannie and Freddie paper, which they were not happy about losing value in. And which, of course, they did. Hey, Kevin, they're very suspicious. And at this point, they look at the money that we're creating, and they're assuming that this is a subtle and a quiet form of default. We are creating too much money. They realize that because we owe them over $1 trillion, and what we're trying to do is actually pay it back with cheaper and cheaper dollars, that they're being treated like patsies. And they don't appreciate being treated like patsies. It's not in that part of the world to accept losing face. And they're losing face. They're losing face right now. How? Because they're being treated like patsies, sitting on $1 trillion of U.S. debt, and we're paying it off with cheaper and cheaper money. That's why in the last few weeks they've been all over the G20 meeting and the suggestion that we need to replace the world's reserve currency with something that's more neutral and not so dollar centric.
And they're in the point place where they might be able to take some of these economic measures against this country. I mean, that can happen. They are a powerful nation, and they might be able to take us on economically.
Well, we're watching them right now spend a tremendous amount of money to buy commodities and strategic minerals. And they're doing that partially to diminish their exposure to U.S. dollars and partially to offset any losses that they have in U.S. dollar exposure. Typically, as the dollar drops, you see commodities do quite well. So they're doing something very sly. If you go back to the 1944 Bretton Woods era, John Maynard Keynes was at that meeting, and he had suggested a kind of currency that he called the Bancor, B-A-N-C-O-R. And what that was a currency that would be backed not by gold, the way we had had in the early part of that century, but a currency that was backed by 30 different commodities. Well, the Chinese central bank is beating the drum right now that this is exactly what we should be doing. And they're arguing for it, but they're not just arguing for it. They're going out and doing this very thing right now.
Yeah.
They've basically cornered the copper market for the last 3 months, and prices are up 45% in that period of time as they're buying tremendous amounts, not just copper, but other strategic minerals to be ahead of this proposal and potentially see the dollar reserve currency status upset.
David, we got to take this thing from the macro to the micro now, because we're talking to a lot of families out there that are really wanting to weather the storm, and it's really my concern that the hundreds of thousands of families that listen to this radio program and other radio programs like this one, who maintain a basically biblical worldview, they want to raise godly families, they want to protect their families, and hopefully maintain some kind of an inheritance for future generations. What do they do? How do they weather this storm, David?
During periods of inflation, the most reliable way to protect wealth is in gold and silver. Mm. It's been treated as currency, as money for 5,000 years anywhere in the world. And there's a reason for that. It is no one's paper promise to pay. There is no liability behind it. There's no obligation behind it. There's no counterparty risk to it. It's just very, very basic.
But David, there's a lot of fear out there that gold is like any other commodity, can be manipulated, and its price, I think, has been somewhat manipulated. How do you address that?
Well, I think for the last 15 years, the gold price and silver price have been manipulated successfully.
Mm-hmm.
You've had COMEX, you've had the plunge protection team, which is perhaps we can talk about another time, but it has been very effectively manipulated. And you can do that. In the short term, you can manipulate any asset, whether it's for a day, a week, a month, even a year. But ultimately, free market forces overwhelm that manipulation, because you're still dealing with limited resources on the side, you know, whoever it is that is manipulating. That's exactly what we're seeing. Kevin, I just came back from a six-week journey around the world. We spent several weeks in Switzerland, some time in Dubai, Singapore, Bangkok, Thailand, Hong Kong, and then finally back home here just this weekend. And what I saw, Kevin, is that we are on the cusp of the general public entering the gold market. And we're not talking about the general public here in the United States, because we are so clueless about the value of gold as a prophylaxis, if you will, or as something that preserves value or protects against the ravages of inflation or market volatility. We're clueless when it comes to that here in the United States, but everyone else in the world is keenly aware of it. They're keenly aware of it. And I think we've gone through the first two stages of a bull market and are on the cusp of moving into a third and perhaps final stage, where for the next 3 to 5 years, we see the general public on a global basis decide that they want to own a few Krug grants, want to own a few Double Eagles, want to own a bag of junk silver, want to own gold jewelry. I mean, I went to the largest gold market in the world today in Dubai, and to see it buzzing, like a beehive. It was absolutely amazing. Now, in that part of the world, they don't buy gold coins. They buy gold that they can wear. Your wife can wear it. Your daughter can wear it. Your son can wear it. And you can have $500,000 of gold that you have with you at any given time. I mean, their wealth is portable. It's private. And it's something that is, again, immune to the ravages of inflation. I think, Kevin, one of the things that's very important for people to understand is that we've exported a certain model of thinking. If you want to look at the best and brightest on Wall Street and the best and brightest in Washington, most of them are Ivy League guys, and they've all studied the same books. So their solutions to the current problems are all the same. And the most important people in positions of power and decision-making anywhere in the world, guess where they've come to school? The same Ivy League schools. The same Ivy League schools. Whether it's Princeton or Yale or Harvard, great schools in their own right. Perhaps they used to be a little bit better 60, 70, 100 years ago. They've lost some of their Christian moorings and their background, I think, which made them great. But you have a tremendous amount of trust being put in these decision makers.
David, we're clean out of time, but I want to recommend your website and your information and your regular radio program. Folks can contact you through McElvaney.com on the web. Thanks so much for joining us on Generations today, my friend.
We'll look forward to doing it again, Kevin.
All right, folks, good stuff on today's radio broadcast. The views expressed here should not be taken as solicitation or recommendation for your investment portfolio. But let me recommend that you check out the Word of God, take those principles to bear, and then apply them to the world around you. You have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast, and you can interact with this radio show by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.
You have been listening to Generations with Kevin Swanson, where we take a look at life through a biblical worldview and a generational focus. If you've been challenged by this program, you need to get a copy of Kevin Swanson's new book, Upgrade, The 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. Get an upgrade at kevinswanson.com. This book addresses many of the issues close to the heart of this program: the power of relationships, the preeminence of character and faith, and the importance of getting the right worldview in education. Get your copy of Upgrade today on the web at www.kevinswanson.com.
Imagine a summer camp for the whole family. A camp with some great messages that will encourage your family to live and love together the way God has laid out in His Word. Imagine a five-day camp with some of the best nationally known speakers on the family. A five-day camp priced from $155. That's $155 for the whole family. We have obtained the use of one of the largest campgrounds in the West for this camp. Your family will hear inspiring messages on relationships and loving the family from some of the familiar voices carried on the Generations Radio broadcast. And there will be plenty of time for relaxing fellowship, hiking, volleyball, softball, high ropes course, paintball, miniature golf, horseshoes, shuffleboard, frisbee golf, tennis, ping pong, paddle boats, and canoeing. We have priced this camp so it will be affordable to the largest families with the lowest income in a tough economy. To register or just check out a little more information on this camp, visit our website, renewingthefamily.com. That's renewingthefamily.com. This camp is sponsored by Reformation Church, a family-integrated church located between Colorado Springs and Denver in Castle Rock.